Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to episode 558 of the My 1-2-3 Cents podcast. I am Kevin Huntsberger, joined once again this week by Chad Smart. And Chad, we kind of, I guess, middle of the week decided we were going to do a Music Mania, a tribute show to Ozzy Osbourne. He had a pretty significant tie to professional wrestling. And then about 24 hours later, we learned of the passing of Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea. We're going to pay tribute to both men. We're going to start with Ozzy and talk more obviously about Hulk Hogan and his impact on not just wrestling, but pop culture in general. But Ozzy Osbourne's death, much like his life, I can't say that I was surprised. And a little caveat, my wife has been kind of doing, I probably shouldn't even go into that. Long story short is, though, we knew that Ozzy's death was imminent with his health ailments. We just saw that big Black Sabbath final concert. And were you an Ozzy fan as the musician growing up? Because we're, Gen Xers, and that was kind of our time period.
You know, I think the first poster that I ever bought for my room was an Ozzy Ultimate Sin poster. I did have the cassette. I had the tribute album. That I did, but I had no idea who Randy Rhoads was at the time. This is a weird thing that pre-internet era, Randy Rhoads died, I think, 5 years prior to the tribute album coming out. I had no way of really going back and discovering who he was. Same way with, I didn't know Def Leppard until Hysteria came out. I had missed the entire, because I didn't have MTV, so I missed the whole Pyromania era. So Ozzy to me started out as Ozzy the solo artist with Ultimate Sin, and then I had the next few albums through No More Tears, and I think that's it. And I can't say I was a fan, but I also can't say I wasn't a fan. He was there. I liked his songs, but I wasn't anybody that I really was huge into. And in fact, I was fortunate enough to see him in concert, but I saw him New Year's Eve of 2018.
Oh, okay.
Which was past the prime of being a really good show, but I got to see him do his little dance and throw water and all the signature moves. So,
I was not an Ozzy fan. I'm more of your pop rock, top 40, Casey Kasem, mm-hmm. Sunday morning kind of guy. But my brother was a huge Ozzy fan. He and his friend, they would watch Headbangers Ball on MTV on Saturday nights. And he and his friend and my dad and our friend's dad, I guess it was probably, I don't know what year it was, mid-80s, went to Ozzy performed at the Kiel Center. I guess it was the Kiel Auditorium back then, but they went and saw him live. And so I was a fan by proxy, I guess. The music would play. It was kind of like wrestling in those early days. I wasn't a big wrestling fan, but it was my dad and brother who introduced it to me. I like more of the stuff you heard on the radio, Crazy Train and Mama, I'm Coming Home, those kinds of things. And then in 1986, things changed a little bit when Ozzy shows up at WrestleMania 2. And that's probably the most...
Let me jump in real quick before we get to that. Prior to that,
I meant to add that. Yes.
I mean, did you, I mean, the Road Warriors used Iron Man as their entrance theme, which again, I'm trying to think, did I have the recollection of that being, or the association of that being Black Sabbath and Ozzy, or was it just a song that was really cool and, you know, perfect theme music for the Road Warriors?
I'm glad you brought that up. Yes, I do remember. And again, you know, you mentioned earlier, you didn't grow up or you didn't have MTV in those early days. And when we first got cable, and I'm going to guess it was 82, 83-ish, maybe. Yeah, probably in that time frame, maybe 84. But MTV was, besides Nickelodeon, MTV was what we had on all the time. And I remember the Black Sabbath Iron Man video and then tying and making that correlation with the Road Warriors. And, you know, you get that, that first, and I don't know the technical musical, you know, that first beat or strum or whatever the technical word is for it. And you knew they were going to come out, and you knew, you know, the Road Warriors were kind of like that, you know, Goldberg, or, you know, they were coming out and they were just destroying whoever they were in the ring against. Eventually that kind of leveled out, but in those early days, man, and I don't know if they came out to that during their AWA run as well, but I remember JCP especially, they came out of that, and it was just, you knew, it was a whole different kind of night for the wrestling.
Yeah. And then we get to the famous or infamous, or I don't have any other more adjectives for infamous or famous.
Are you
legendary? Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting, you know, they were, or Ozzy's music was the theme. And again, this was back in an era where the wrestling companies were not paying attention to, or whatever you want to say it, to licensing, because as we'll talk about Hulk Hogan in a little bit, you know, his original theme was Eye of the Tiger from Rocky III. You know, so both the WWF and JCP were using licensing without paying any kind of licensing fees for it. But it was
did you see Tony Schiavone's recent comments about that? Someone asked him, I think it was on one of the Conrad shows, about using music, and he said, yeah, that we just did it, and it wasn't until the Turner, I think, attorneys came in their family and be like, why are you using this music that we're not paying for? And he's like, we can't do that. I'm like, no.
And then
that's when they got people to rip off songs. So
right, well, you know, yeah, you wouldn't give it much thought or think much about it, but and again, I think going down a whole nother rabbit hole, but you know, then you were able to get those custom themes, if you will. And, and we still, to this day, hear a few commercial songs that are still being paid for, though. Tony Khan pays for music, and I know WWE pays for Punk's music specifically. But, you know, Ozzy shows up at WrestleMania 2 with the British Bulldogs. And I think the only really connection there was, hey, we're all from
England.
Britain. So, or from England. So let's tie Ozzy in with the British Bulldogs. And I can't, and I was going to go back and look and I didn't, and maybe you did. Was Ozzy part of that initial Rowdy Roddy Piper anti-rock and roll MTV rant, war to settle the score stuff? Because I know they had lined up a bunch of musicians that cut little promos and stuff. I can't remember if Ozzy was included in that or not.
I want to say yes, but I'm not 100% sure.
I meant to look that up before we started. And
because I missed that, I didn't even think of that. I'm just real quick looking to see. Also, I believe 86 is when the Ultimate Sin album came out in 1986. So I'm going to guess that was a, you know, way to promote the album as well.
Yeah. And, you know, you obviously, like we said, that was kind of, you were listening to that kind of music and jumping ahead to WrestleMania 3. Alice Cooper shows up, who I know is
should be in the Hall of Fame.
My favorite. He's one of them.
Yeah.
Did those appearances make a difference to you as a fan, or were you just like, oh, this is cool, this is just another thing that I like that's a part of this? Because if you weren't watching wrestling, I don't know that you would have plunked down $40 to buy WrestleMania just to see Alice Cooper or Ozzy Osbourne stand outside the ring.
Yeah, I don't think you would have. yeah, they probably did not increase buy rates, but yes, as an Alice Cooper fan, that was like awesome to me. Like, oh my gosh, here's, you know, Alice teaming up with Jake, you know, so they had the snake connection. And I know with Alice, you know, he was just on the verge of his comeback at that time. So I'm sure that's why, plus being from the Detroit area, tie into WrestleMania 3. But yeah, Ozzy, I mean, I thought it was cool that Ozzy was there, but I didn't have the same reaction that I had once they announced Alice Cooper.
Yeah. Well, and you know, his connection stayed, you know, like many celebrities, sometimes it's a one and done and you don't, you know, we never saw G. Gordon Liddy or Joan Rivers again, I don't think it is.
Or Clara Peller, man.
But, such, you know, eventually Ozzy and his family, especially when they went mainstream with the reality show. And I think that's where a lot more people kind of learned about Ozzy, and he wasn't this necessarily satanic evil figure that, you know, the folklore, or I guess, you know, the stories that we've heard as kids and saw and read about long before the internet too, by the way. But he's inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2021, and I think he was in pretty bad health, not bad health, but he was not, you know, that was the COVID, those were the COVID years too, so I think they recorded a thing with him and accepted the award, but he was in with that whole DX. They did a DX skit with him and some things prior to that, which I think all led to him eventually going into the Hall of Fame. Chris Masters coming out and doing the peck
bounce. Yeah, I was going to say, do you want to see my impersonation?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's see it. If you're listening, be sure to jump over to YouTube and watch this.
That's not happening. One, I don't have the pecs, and two, my pecs don't move. So
yeah. they only head down. So obviously a big influence in pop culture and in history. It's just, and I don't mean to sound like cliche and say our childhood is dying, but this past week, you know, we're reporting on Sunday, and in the course of that week, at least four figures from our childhood, Malcolm Jamal Warner, who was Theodore Huxtable on The Cosby Show, Ozzy, Hulk Hogan, Chuck Mangione. I know some people are like, who's that? But if you ever watched King of the Hill, you know who Chuck Mangione
is. Yeah, I was going to say, that's how I know Chuck Mangione. Yeah. We just watched that episode like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm not going to lie and pretend like I knew who he was before that either. I knew the song, but I, you know, I never associated it. And that song had popped up at a couple of fundraiser events that I've been to in the past several years as well. So I kind of always, every time I hear that, I think of him and that King of the Hill episode. But, you know, I read a quote the other day that says, the longer you live, the more goodbyes you have to say. And I don't know, man. I don't want to be melancholy or sad or whatever, but it just, this past week has sucked. And I've had a couple of personal losses myself this past week as well. So it's just not been a good week by any means, but we're going to remember the good times. And I know with Hulk Hogan, Terry Bolleo, you know, I made a quick reaction video minutes after finding out that he had died, and I got a little blowback on it, but not a lot, not like I expected. I expect more people to be critical of it. How'd you hear the news of Hulk's passing?
I got a Snapchat from some random dumbass.
Well, it's funny, but it's not funny. But
I
do remember, like, there are moments that I remember. Dusty. Hold on, my computer just freaked out. Dusty, Roddy Piper, Chris Benoit, Eddie Guerrero, the Big Boss Man, and most of those were you conveying that message to me, because some of these were pre-internet or pre-social media. I remember you texted me on both Piper and on Dusty. I had been at the doctor for Dusty's and had not had my phone, and then I went and checked it. Ultimate Warrior, you know, I remember his passing, and now with Hulk. Someone, I was in a meeting at work and went back to my office, and I had a Facebook message that had popped up, and they said, the message just said, I guess Bubba the Love Sponge wasn't wrong. And I was like, wait, what? And I immediately searched. And then, of course, TMZ was reporting it. And then other outlets had started reporting it. And I had snapped it to you. But I'm not exaggerating when I say my phone blew up, because people know you're a wrestling fan. And so I'm getting tagged and stuff. I'm getting text messages, and friends were calling to, you know, tell me and whatnot. So because these were non-wrestling fans that were texting and calling and whatnot too. So it's goes for the range of his appeal and popularity, especially in the 80s and 90s. You know, everyone knew who Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant were, whether they were a wrestling fan or not.
Yeah, and I think real quick before we dive into Hogan deeply, I think we need to make a caveat here. And I'll speak for me. You can jump in and see if you agree. There's the saying, you always separate the art from the artist. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we'll, you know, whitewash, no pun intended, or, you know, steer away from certain aspects of Terry Bollea's life. But I think when discussing Hulk Hogan, it's more a discussion of the character that was in the wrestling and pop culture environment.
Sure. I 100% agree. And I, you know, when I made my quick little, it was like a 90-second mm-hmm. TikTok or whatever it was, you know, I got a comment on Instagram because I posted it there too. And I responded back to the person and said, you know, there's a lot of people who are, I don't want to say polarizing or, but I saw a lot of people who kind of struggled with finding the right things to say. And I agree, you know, we are talking about Hulk Hogan, this man, the first LJN in my collection, and not the man behind the character. You know, it's, and wrestling is so weird because when Hulk Hogan goes on The Tonight Show, you know, he's in character as Hulk Hogan. Yeah. Nobody wants to see Terry Bollea. But when Arnold Schwarzenegger went on, you know, he wasn't going on as the kindergarten cop or Terminator or anything like that. It was as Arnold Schwarzenegger. So wrestling, again, is that weird line of reality versus character. And I think most of us are into that character world and not the reality. If that makes sense.
Right. And I know, I mean, I'm going to try to stay away from politics as much as possible, but I'm sure some things will come up. But, you know, at the 2024 Republican convention, Hogan comes out, cuts a, hey, brother, you know, Donald Trump, blah, blah, blah. And then he says, okay, that was Hulk Hogan. Now I'm going to talk to you as Terry Bollea. Mm-hmm. I think there is a definite, and I think Hogan is one of those people that you can separate. As we've said, John Cena seems more even keel across the board between character and real person. Randy Orton, mm-hmm. kind of the same way. But Hulk Hogan definitely, again, coming up in the 80s, which was a bigger than or larger than life time in pop culture, the character definitely, I think, outshadows the man.
Oh, yeah, 100%, 100%. What are you, let's go back to the very beginning. You know, we've talked before about our fandom and when we were watching and how we were watching. I'm beating a dead horse here, but it was Kerry Von Erich and Ric Flair that captured me. I don't remember Hulk Hogan until probably January of 84 when he won the WWF Championship from the Iron Sheik. Like, that's my first kind of recollection and looking at things. I know he had gone to the AWA. He was in Rocky III. I saw Rocky III before I got really into wrestling, but I didn't know, you know, I didn't know him as anything other than Thunderlips at that point. So do you remember the first time that you can really recall Hulk Hogan being a part of your fandom or a part of what you were watching with wrestling?
No, like I've said before, I don't remember exactly when I got into WWF. I know it was shortly before WrestleMania 1, but I don't really have any memories. You know, especially at that time, Hogan wasn't showing up on the weekly show.
Right. Yeah.
So, so my first real memory of Hogan is Saturday Night Live and WrestleMania 1. But I know obviously there was something before that that planted the seed for me wanting to watch WrestleMania.
Sure. And, you know, I think it could be argued, and we did a podcast, I think, on the 40-year anniversary of Hulkamania, or WWF's version of Hulkamania. You know, who could have been, if Hulk Hogan had never been around, if Vern Gagne gave him the AWA championship and he stayed in that company, you know, would the AWA have flourished and taken off? As much credit as Hulk Hogan gets, and obviously rightfully deserves, it takes two to tango. And I don't think without Vince McMahon's vision, financing, marketing, that whole machine getting behind him and going all in.
Yeah.
Pardon the pun. I don't think we're here today doing any podcast that is about wrestling. I just think that that combination was the sweet spot that really changed the world. And I'm not, you know, that may sound dramatic, but I think that as far as wrestling fandom goes.
Yeah. And I think even if you take Hogan out and you still have Vince, who has that vision, who's got, like you said, that's his drive is to make wrestling as popular as it was. Take Hogan out, even with the cast of characters that were in WWF at that time. I don't see anybody else other than Hogan being on Sports Illustrated covers, hosting Saturday Night Live, being in music videos, or, you know, going on to talk shows the way that Hogan brought in. I mean, once Arsenio Hall came along, after wrestling was already popular, you had, you know, Warrior and Savage and Bossman going on there. But I don't think without Hogan, any of that happens. And I think that's where people that are, or I shouldn't say people, I'll just say criticism of Hogan right now in his passing. Think whatever you want, but without Hulk Hogan, WrestleMania 41 is not in Vegas. WrestleMania 2 may not even happen. There's no live weekly wrestling event because you had Hogan taking it in that first step with Vince. And then if the NWO doesn't come around in the late 90s and you get that Monday Night War, which, so you bring in Eric Bischoff, who has that Vince McMahon drive, I guess, as well. Take Hogan out of the equation. Like you said, we're not sitting here. If we're watching wrestling, we're going to the Legion Hall, you know, with 50 other people.
Yeah. Right. 100%. And, you know, for me, I was a Hulkamaniac in those early days. You know, when he won the championship, I still watched all the companies, World Class and Jim Crockett Promotions and all of those other companies. But my first house show, my first live wrestling event was WWF, Hulk Hogan and Brutus Beefcake, the main event, December 27th, 1984. Yeah, I remember weird shit like that. It was him at that first WrestleMania, the War to Sun, you know, all of those things come together and build up to opening opportunities and that crossover appeal because Hulk Hogan just stood out. And I think we talked about it in that episode back 2 years ago or a year and a half ago now. The only other one that I could see, Hogan had the charisma, he had the look, his in-ring ability was what it was, but it was what it needed to be in that era. So he had the, you know, he was that guy. Dusty had the charisma, definitely. He could do the stuff in the ring. He was a little older and he didn't have the look. Dusty, I wouldn't see on the cover of Sports Illustrated. I can't see Dusty and Zeus standing nose to nose on the No Holds Barred movie poster. So it's things like that, that he had the charisma, I don't think he, and allegedly Vince was kind of looking at Dusty at that time for that role. I just don't see the same results, if you will.
Yeah, same with Ric Flair.
Definitely.
Obviously, charisma, more talented, but just didn't have that it factor to translate to the populace.
Do you think, and you said it factor, and it made me think of Dwayne Johnson, The Rock, of course. Would wrestling have survived till 96 and him to come around to kind of make it larger than life? I don't know. I don't know that.
I don't think so. Well, and would he be The Rock without Hulk Hogan?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
You know, because, and I guess you go back prior to Hogan, superstar Billy Graham.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would Hogan have channeled the Hogan character if not for Billy Graham? Possibly. I have no answer for that. I just.
Yeah. No, I see what you're saying. Well, you know, and, you know, other than the originals, obviously everyone, Jesse Ventura, Dusty Rhodes, Hulk Hogan, they were all emulating or taking things from superstar. I think everyone to, you know, wrestlers today are picking up and taking pieces. It's, you know, and it's not stealing, it's, you know, paying homage or paying tribute or whatever you want to call it, and putting a modern day spin on things that have worked. And I think Hogan, you know, my fandom for him, obviously, like I mentioned, lasted through the 80s. And it was probably the early 90s. I can't pinpoint the exact moment, but I think it was probably late 91 when Ric Flair comes to the WWF. My views changed. My position on Hulkamania changed. And I guess part of it was boredom and growing tired of the red and yellow. And it was the same, you know, it was for 7 years, Hulk up, point the finger, big boot to the face, leg drop, 1, 2, 3. And Flair brought something different to the mix. And I know then wrestling kind of goes through a down period. And I don't know if it was already heading that direction or Hogan's departure. Cause for most of 92, then after WrestleMania 8, we didn't see him again until January of 93. So I think that would have been the time to bring him back as a bad guy. But I think they were too worried at that point about doing something that drastic. And we know a few years later that it really it changed the industry again. Yeah. So no one in the history of the business, I think, unless you want to count Vince McMahon in there, but I think it was Hogan's turning heel in 96 that made Vince McMahon change his approach and develop this quote unquote attitude era.
Yeah. And I mean, there's this whole surrounding factors. I mean, change in attitudes amongst the public, change in, you know, back when the My 1-2-3 Cents blog started, I wrote a blog about how the attitude era could only happen in that specific time frame because of everything else that was going on. You know, we talked Ozzy earlier. You look at the musical landscape in the 90s, completely different than what it was in the 80s. Those things had to change. And unfortunately, wrestling, even now, has a tendency to overstay the welcome of some things. I mean, we look at John Cena. You know, should they have turned him heel earlier? Or did that, you know, when the fans backlash towards him did, but I think with one of the good things that has come from the Attitude Era and Cena right now too, is also you have a stronger lineup of opponents. Mm-hmm. You know, with Hogan, you had the monsters that would then get vanquished and would move down the card. Whereas now you kind of keep people on the same level. You know, Randy, you know, the John Cena, Randy Orton feud, it wasn't like Orton got beat and then went back down to IC matches or anything. He stuck around
right
that level.
You know, you people talk all the time about, you know, Hogan needing that monster factory, but he really, you know, you had Piper, you had Orndorff, you had
Real quick, going back to WrestleMania 1, or as we were saying, you know, it couldn't be anybody but Hogan being in this spot, you know, to be in this position. And you said it takes two to tango, but three's a crowd.
Sure.
Without Piper, to be the foil for Hogan in the whole rock and wrestling camp. I also don't think things take off because Piper out, put in Paul Orndorff or Cowboy Bob Orton or Dr. D. David Schultz. I don't think any of them have the, again, that it factor to suck people in. I think they would have done a good job in creating a solid wrestling match, but not the mania, if you will.
Yeah, that's a perfect point. Yeah, that's 100%. I don't think definitely need that third person. And I think sometimes Rowdy Piper gets overlooked in that regard. I think that without his contribution, especially in lead up to the first WrestleMania, that we don't have what we have. And it's interesting because, you know, Piper never really changed his ways. Mm-hmm. It was just, you know, the fans started liking that and supporting that. And so then he just kind of took that energy and put it towards the heels. And with Hogan, he never really changed his ways. And he was heelish in his actions, you know, raking the eyes or scratching down the back or whatever, you know, throwing.
Having lust in his eyes, yes.
Yes, you know, but fans stayed behind him and supported him and until they didn't anymore. And I do think, It's interesting because I just was thinking, you know, we're talking about longevity and how, you know, guys like John Cena and Randy, you know, Randy Orton has been active duty since 2002. I think that's 23 years. If we did the same thing with Hogan,
yeah,
84 to what 2007, I couldn't imagine him still being there and at the top or near the top for that long. Yeah. And obviously it was a much different era in the 80s and 90s where they're on the road constantly. In the last probably 5 or 6 years, things have kind of leveled off as far as the travel schedule goes. It's still pretty intense, but not anything like it was back in the day. But Hogan's jumped to WCW. I can remember by then, you know, I'm in college and I was definitely over Hulkamania. I was more disappointed to see him leave WWF because, again, I was more of a WWF fan than I was WCW. I watched both, but I wanted him to stay. Even if I wasn't cheering for him actively, I wanted him to still be a part of that. And the presentation really didn't change. And he goes in and he beats Flair right away and starts that whole thing. And it's kind of a repeat. You know, he's wrestling guys like Avalanche or Shark. Kamala comes in, the Nasty Boys and the Honky Tonk Man, and it became kind of like that WWE light. But eventually, the tide turns, and someone, and whether it's Eric Bischoff or Scott Hall or whoever, convinces him, Hogan, that is, to, you know, abandon the red and yellow and turn heel, and it re-energized a base. And I think a lot of those early to mid '80s fans came back because my friends, who I watched when we were kids, they waned away and stopped watching. They were back in 96, 97, 98 during the height of that war.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's an interesting, it's really not interesting, but you had fans that were kids during the first Hogan era in WWE. Now they're in college. Or, you know, just out of college when the NWO takes over. Yeah. And so, you know, you look back in that 80s era when the Horsemen started getting popular and it was your 20 something bros, for lack of a better term, that were showing up wearing the suits, you know, holding up the four fingers. But now with the NWO, I think it's that same attitude of broness of like, this is super cool. We want to be part of it. That drags people back into wrestling. And, you know, and then I think also, you know, opposite the NWO, you had Austin and The Rock, obviously in WWF. Take one of those two companies out of the equation. Does wrestling get by? And I know we're just supposed to be about Hogan, but I'm turning it into more of how does wrestling stay popular?
Right.
Without the NWO, do the Rock and Austin become the characters that they are? because again, Vince had to change, and you know, the ringmaster wasn't lighting things on fire. You know, I think you and I were at the were you at the St. Louis show, Shawn Michaels versus Goldust main event? Because you remember, third match on that card was Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Duke the Dumpster Drosy. A week before King of the Ring 96.
Yeah.
Crowd couldn't care, or they could care less. They couldn't care less. I think this is the proper phrasing. They couldn't care less that Steve Austin was in that match. Right. But 2 weeks later, Austin 316 is everywhere.
Right.
And I know without Triple H in the curtain call, that doesn't happen right. either.
Yeah.
But if they don't, and it took a, you know, it still took over a year for Stone Cold to become the focus. Yeah. The Rock, you know, Rocky Maivia wasn't electrifying crowds. So do you think, yeah, do you think they would have got the chance to even become what they were, if not kind of Vince being kind of in a hole to make new stars?
Right. And that begs, you know, obviously WCW, for my original San Francisco toy maker, Hulk Hogan out now for this part of it. I received this as a birthday gift from my coworkers. This would have been in 1998 when I was working in Alabama. So Hogan's full-fledged heel by now, but these were still on the shelves, which I think is a testament to the, you know, my coworkers knew I liked wrestling, and so they went and found a wrestling figure, and it was, you know, Hulk Hogan was the most recognizable. So anyway, that's a side tangent, but I found it interesting that WWF, and maybe Hogan was part of that, you know, didn't want to turn him heel, make him the bad guy. There were rumors that at one point he was supposed to be a heel and wrestle Dustin Rhodes at WrestleMania 9, wrestle Scott Steiner. I don't know if any of those are true. Those are stories that we've heard in recent years, but Hogan getting on board with, you know, because he was comfortable. I think he was a man who was found comfort in what was familiar to him. And that's why you saw Earthquake and the Nasty Boys and those types going over to WCW. And he was wrestling those types of matches still. And it wasn't until making that bold decision to turn him bad. And, you know, we saw kind of with the John Cena heel turn. It's not been what I think a lot of people expected it to be. That, you know, Hogan's heel turn in 96, I think, go down as the biggest heel turn in the history. Because of everything then that played out after that. You get the build up, the creation of Goldberg. You get the NWO, you know, and going head to head with WWF and or WWE. And I don't think, you know, like you said earlier, Hurt Call doesn't happen. Triple H wins King of the Ring, and, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin stays at the mid card. There were just so many opportunities to shine and to break out. And, you know, I love Stone Cold Steve Austin. He's, you know, he and Ric Flair are right there as my two all-time favorites. But again, I don't think we get to that level of popularity without this guy, not once but twice, in the mid-80s and then again in 96, turning heel and really turning wrestling on its head, because WWF was doing Duke the Dumpster Drosy and T.L. Hopper and, you know,
Sparky Plug. Yeah.
Sparky Plug. It was all these gimmick, occupational, kind of silly, crazy stuff. And WCW wasn't any better, you know, with Arachnaman and Van Hammer and those types of wrestlers. So the realism of the late 90s with Hall and Nash coming in. But again, if they come in and Sting is that third man, I don't think it necessarily changes things either. It's Hogan being in the right place at the right time, willing to do the work and do business with those ideas and running and taking off with them. And I think that any, you know, people talk about getting saddled with a gimmick, you know, Terry Taylor as the Red Rooster, for example. I think another performer could have made that work, you know, Dusty Rhodes and the Polka Dots. He took it as a, you know, he made it shine. So Hogan did that with the heel turn.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say Mark Calloway with the Undertaker.
Right.
You know, he made that character, but did he make the character, or would the character have, you know, if they would have given it to, I'm trying to think of someone who came in around the same time, you know, if Hector Guerrero would have been the Undertaker and Mark Calloway would have been Gobbledygooker. I still don't think Gobbledygooker is going to stick around for 20 years, but is the Undertaker going to be, you know, this character that we know now? Right. It would have lasted. Yeah. So I have thoughts, but I think it might derail and go back to a different topic. So let's stay on what you were saying real quick.
I mean, that was just
What I'm thinking is more the negative of Hogan, and we haven't got to that yet, but Hogan coming in. I don't know. I'm going to jump to what I have because I don't
do it.
Because it does kind of tie in with what you were saying about familiarity. So one of the, you know, biggest fan complaints about Hogan is the, you know, ratting out Jesse Ventura for wanting to unionize and kind of looking out for himself. But, and I'm probably going to get both of us dizzy with the spin that I'm about to put on this. Again, 40 years ago, wrestling business, much different than what it is today. There are no guaranteed contracts. There's no guarantee at all.
Right.
If you get injured, even if you're at the top, by the time you come back, things could change.
Yeah.
So was Hogan's being selfish of trying to be on, you know, keep himself on top? Is it being selfish, or is it in a way, and I guess, you know, in the 80s, greed is good. Is it him just protecting himself and saying, you know, I'm the man, I'm the focus of this company. I'm the one bringing in the money. I need to, if he goes out, does it affect everyone else down the line? And not so much in getting a push or anything, but if he's not drawing the crowds in, are the wrestlers going to make less money themselves?
Yeah, it does become an interesting talking point, because were there more benefits to unionizing for the wrestlers long-term? Probably, maybe. But does that then take away from, and I don't know what all the details are involved in creating a union or making it, you know, because obviously Major League Baseball and you know, all of these other sports groups and Screen Actors Guild, you know, everybody seemingly in entertainment, the things that we watch has some kind of, I don't know if NASCAR does or Pro Bowling, but, you know, I think there might've been growing pains initially. So maybe on one hand, it would have been good that we don't have to then see in 2025, Brian Knobbs with a GoFundMe page to pay his medical bills because he doesn't have any. But on the other hand, without Hulk Hogan and rising to that level, would we know who Brian Knobbs is in 2025? So and I to steal your phrase, interesting, but maybe not interesting thing to think about, you know, because I don't know. I don't know that things would have been hurt by it. I think that wrestling is just such a unique enterprise and you know, because they say they're general contractors and but you know, you're not gonna see Hangman Page show up on Raw, much like you wouldn't though see LeBron James show up and play for the Pacers one. You know what I mean? So I'm probably going down a whole different rabbit hole with this, but I don't think not unionizing hurt anything long-term. I think that, but I don't know if it would have had an impact. I think it would have put JCP out of business much sooner than it did if they would have.
Well, yeah. And I think that's the bigger issue is what would it have done to smaller companies, you know, because would they have been able to operate outside of union rules? Kind of like, you know, when the Screen Actors Guild and the Writers Guild went on strike a couple of years ago, there were some productions that got clearances to keep filming, keep producing shows during the strike. But those were for short-term projects, you know. Could a company like Stride, like Chikara, St. Louis Anarchy, could they be running shows under without unionized, I don't know what the phrase I'm trying to say here, if the union was across wrestling, and would it, how would it, how would a wrestler get involved with the union? Did you have to, would you have to wrestle X amount of days a year? You know, certain companies, how much, you know, independent wrestlers aren't making a lot of money unless they have name value themselves. So you paying union dues when you're getting a hot dog and a handshake as payment. I don't, again, those are questions that are outside our scope and without actually happening, probably have no real answers to them.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, you kind of started down the track of COVID. And again, part of it is, yeah, it may have been greed, but then I also think back and wonder, like we said, would, you know, if this was an 85 or 86, you know, does that stunt the growth of the business in WrestleMania specifically and Hulkamania and the thing? But then you also look at the creative control side of things and alleged, you know, him stroking his Fu Manchu and saying that doesn't work for me, brother. Whether that was really done as often as some claim, but you know, in just even the last couple of weeks, we saw it with Becky Lynch. You know, people calling her Becky Hogan, and then she kind of trolls folks and shows up. I don't remember if it was Raw or if it was the last PLE, wearing red and yellow. So I mean, good or bad, you know. Yeah, we credit Hogan with a lot in the business, but then also sometimes that darker side of the business, you know, that creative control factor still kind of creeps its ugly head up.
Yeah, and again, is that a byproduct of being, to steal Becky Lynch's phrase, being the man and being like, hey, if I'm not on top, this whole thing may crumble, or is it just ego? And I think by the late 90s, it was more ego than anything, because I think by that point, wrestling had grown to be bigger than an individual wrestler. You know, like right now, WWE can survive without John Cena or Randy Orton or Roman Reigns. That company's still going to be there, and they're going to find someone to focus on, and the fans are going to come because the three letters on the marquee.
Well, you know, kind of going back in time too, I remember, and I think even Pro Wrestling Illustrated got the issue here somewhere, did a cover article. I remember WrestleMania 8 was kind of where it started feeling different. But WrestleMania 9 was definitely had a different vibe, because that's really, and I know he comes out at the last minute, but it's not advertised. So WrestleMania 9 is the first WrestleMania where Hulk Hogan is not a part of the main event. I know he didn't wrestle in the main event of WrestleMania 4, but he was part of that main event. Hulkamania was still very much running wild. So WrestleMania 9 for me is when WrestleMania kind of started feeling different. And not, and I'm kind of trying to, you know, think of what I mean by that. I was, you know, I was in college. I was still watching. In fact, my parents recorded, they bought WrestleMania on pay-per-view and recorded it on VHS and then brought it to, you know, sent it to me. So I still watched that show, not live, but again, there were no spoilers on the internet. So I was genuinely surprised as I watched it, but it just was a different vibe. And then moving forward, you know, WrestleMania and Hulkamania were so synonymous for those first 8 years. And now it's just different. And now, like you said, there's not, I don't tie any, you know, like you could do a WrestleMania card without John Cena or without Randy Orton. And I feel like it's still WrestleMania. WrestleMania is a brand. Whereas in those early days, and I think, again, that's where Hogan's influence comes in. Without that, WrestleMania isn't what it is today. There isn't a WrestleMania
40. Yeah. And I don't know if you, have you watched the documentary about WrestleMania 9 on
Yes.
Peacock? Not a sponsor. Okay. I believe in that show, because Hogan's, you know, the tag match with Beefcake against Money Inc. isn't promoted until a couple weeks before the show. And if I remember correctly, like, Hogan wasn't supposed to be a part of the show. It was kind of like the Vegas people coming to Vince and being like, we need Hogan on this show to sell tickets. And so, again, if you're the one that's selling tickets, you know, what was it? Elimination Chamber in Toronto this year, where they announced, what's that?
I was agreeing with
you. Yeah, I think they announced Roman Reigns or John Cena or somebody like shortly before the show happened. Well, The Rock, yeah, you're right. That played out well. They announced The Rock, according to The Rock, to get, you know, to juice up ticket sales. So if you're in that position, are you going to, I don't know, I guess there are some team people who would be like, yeah, okay, well, whatever you want me to do. But I think most people would be like, okay, well, if you're using me, then I'm going to use you as well to be, you know, on top.
Yeah, and, you know, we saw it a few times in the 80s with Randy Savage, with the Ultimate Warrior. You know, they try to go in another direction, but I feel like they were, those superstars, specifically Warrior and Savage, were still under that shadow of Hogan. You know, SummerSlam 90 is billed as a double main event with Hogan and Earthquake and Warrior and Rude in the steel cage. That match goes on last, but I think that's more because it was a steel cage and they didn't have the technology back then to raise and lower the cages. With Savage, you know, it worked nicely and played into a storyline with Savage eventually turning heel again over the jealousy of Hogan being in the final. I just wonder, had Hogan truly gone away and stayed away, you know, they did angles and stuff to get him out so he can go make movies. But if he would have legitimately stayed gone, would WWF had been able to take Warrior to that Hogan level? Because I feel like Hogan's here, Savage, Warrior, you know, all the others are just right under that line. So I don't know. It part of it, I think, was comfortable familiarity from Vince McMahon, knowing, okay, I've always got Hogan in reserve and I'm going to keep him sprinkled in, because, you know, that Survivor Series in 89 or in 88, when it's Hogan and Savage as co-captains, they both are the sole survivors. In 1990, it's the ultimate Survivor Series match where all of the competitors who won their matches go on to the finals, and it's Hogan and Warrior standing victorious. Warrior's the champion, so we never saw Hogan share that spotlight when he was the champion with someone else. You know what I'm saying? So instead of giving that rub to someone, he's there still as part of the, if that makes sense. I think as the someone else, but he's still there kind of in that spotlight, or as part of that spotlight with the champion of the time.
Yeah, we've made the comment before in the show that it's the Pucci effect. It's whenever Pucci is off screen, characters should be asking, where is Pucci? And it happened, you know, we talked about, for me, that's part of the reason why Cody Rhodes hasn't been successful, because even when he was champion, everything was about Roman Reigns and that shadow of Roman Reigns covering everything. And again, you know, again, hindsight's easy to look back on and say, oh, he shouldn't have done this or they should have done that. But when you're in that time, and who, we do not know what's going on in the day-to-day dealings with wrestlers or anything, or the business aspect, you know, I mean, like right now with all the branding and all the sponsorships, is there, you know, someone at one of the sponsors saying like, oh, we want to sponsor you, but we want this to happen, or we want this wrestler to promote our product specifically, you know, and then you give into that. So is it, you know, when the Arsenio Hall show comes around, is it WWE trying to get people in there and being like, oh, we can send you Jake Roberts or Piper? And then like, no, we want, you know, Hogan or Savage or or no one. So
right, yeah, yeah. It is a slippery slope, and as we start to kind of wind down on this week's episode, I did want to talk a little bit about the negative side of things, and kind of, I'm not going to wag my finger at social media, but I'm going to say that people who have judged those who have or haven't come out and made comments, or, you know, I thought, and I didn't watch the episode live. I watched parts of it, like I do. I don't have USA Network. I did see the tribute on SmackDown. I saw that, you know, and you got to think, they literally had just over 24 hours to plan a tribute show. I thought WWE did a good job with what they, you know, with what they did presentation wise. I social media is experts in everything, the IWC specifically. Don't tell us how to mourn. Don't tell us how to celebrate someone's life. You know, you can have opinions, but when you're making death threats, and I know that Chelsea Green is one of those who received death threats for her comments on Marvel, I just don't understand that mentality. We can agree to disagree and then scroll on, move on. Don't have to make every moment, you know, about you or your feelings or whatever. You know, we've talked before. We type stuff out all the time on social media and then delete it. Sometimes it feels good to just type it out and then be done with it. So my point is, you know, and AEW got criticism. Why haven't they said anything? Well, they said something on Collision on Saturday night. And I thought it was appropriate, you know. Again, without that influence and that rise of Hulkamania, AEW Collision doesn't exist. And, yeah. Or definitely not on TNT and in the capacity that it's already. So I just think that people need to chill and not judge others with how they grieve someone or you know, not everybody wants to go public and share their thoughts and feelings, and that's okay too.
Yeah. My feeling is also the negative that we've heard about Terry Bollea, again, separating personalities. It's all kind of secondhand. And I know there's the audio tape of the phone call where some things are said. I'm trying to phrase this in a way because I'm not condoning, nor am I condemning, and I know that maybe I should take a stand. But I think there are things that were done, said, that we don't know, again, as outsiders, we don't know entire context. We don't know situations. And I know there are things I have said at times that I shouldn't have said and wish I could take back. Does that make me a bad person? I mean, I guess that's for people to judge once that information comes out. But I just, again, this is the negative of social media, like you're saying, where for some reason, everything has to be negative. And I know that's kind of a broad umbrella. It's not necessarily everything, but I also don't get why, if, again, you know, as Thumper said in Bambi, if you don't have something nice to say, don't say it at all. And then that's where, with social media, where I'm just like, why are you writing this? Why are you putting this out? You know, if you feel this way, hey, that's how you feel. Great. Tell it to one of your friends. But to put it out for the world to see, to me, again, it's just hate begets hate. And I know, again, we could go down another whole 2 hours of how society is right now. None of that is going to help anything. And also, you know, I think it's like Tony Schiavone said, you know, on Collision, Terry Bollea had a family and he had friends that knew him better than what the IWC knows him. I don't know. I'm kind of rambling. I'm kind of getting off point, but I just, you know, I yeah, jump in here and save me, throw me a lifeline.
Well,
come on, Hulk Hogan, swim on your back. And
I will wrap things up and just say, you know, be kind you can have opinions and share those opinions. And I understand it. And I know, like you said, we could go another 2 hours talking about the political landscape or the way of the world today, how social media has made it more acceptable or commonplace to have those negative opinions and be able to kind of say what you want behind your keyboard and get away with it. But we're going to continue to practice what we preach and be kind and let people know that it's wrestling. It's wrestling. It's entertainment for us. It's fun. And when it stops being fun, we'll stop watching it. We'll stop participating in it and doing the podcast. But on a positive note, I've gotten a few more donations for the My123Cents action figure drive for this upcoming, our wrestling figure drive for this upcoming Christmas. So it is still Christmas in July for another few days. So if you want to make a contribution, you can enter them for a drawing. And some fabulous prizes right here. And I may have a Hulk Rules DVD I may throw into that mix as well. But friends, thank you for listening and or watching. Be sure to leave us your thoughts, your opinions, and leave a review of the show or this specific episode. And we will see you next.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.